Live coverage of a speech by Exxon USA President William Stevens. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Heimel. We're here in the Anchorage Hilton Hotel, and this is, along with an adjacent building, is the site for the Alaska State and Alaska Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Convention and Trade Show. We're here to listen to a speech by Bill Stevens, the president of Exxon USA. He'll be speaking on the subject of reflections on Valdez. This is thought to be a speech in which he'll be looking back into the way that Exxon handled the events after March 24th, when the Exxon Valdez went aground on Bly Reef and gouted out 240,000 barrels of oil. Stevens has been in the state before. The person who is most generally associated with the big bad Exxon is Larry Rawls, the chairman of the corporation. Stevens is a more moderate voice of the president of the corporation as opposed to the chairman. He came about a week and a half after the oil spill. He did not speak publicly. I believe he spoke with the governor. He took a look at the spill, and he basically said that they'd do whatever was required to restore Prince William Sound at that time. He gave a number of assurances and then left. Since then, he's appeared at testimony before congressional committees, and people here, I think, are very much looking forward to what he has to say. This is the first time that he's appeared in Alaska to give a speech following the spill. As I said, he has been up here a couple of times before, and he's made other public appearances. There are people in the crowd who are here because they want to hear what Mr. Stevens has to say, and also because they want to protest what he has to say. People have come around and said to us, well, you know, we'll be available afterwards to offer a response to this. With me is Bruce Melzer, the news director of radio station KSKA. Well, Bruce, here we are, waiting for the Chamber of Commerce to go through their usual rigmarole here.
That's true. A friendlier crowd, I don't think you could find Bill Stevens if one had to pick a forum to speak in Alaska, other than the guys down at the Petroleum Club. This is probably it. This extremely, obviously, large number of members of the oil industry are part of this group. Interestingly enough, also here today are a lot of members of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. And this weekend, they sent a questionnaire around, basically in a couple sentences, apologizing for the spill, and then saying, we want to know how you feel about the oil industry. And so there is an effort in the business community and the oil industry right now to try and assess the damage that the spill has done to the image of the industry up here, perhaps to try and figure out what can be done to fix that. And some of those people, I think, here are going to be looking for that. They're going to be, a lot of them are industry people, business people, and they're going to be looking for what type of picture Stevens offers for them.
I think at this point, you know, Exxon has phased out the cleanup, and we did have a period of intense polarization in Alaska surrounding oil taxes, surrounding the morale of oil industry employees, points where, you know, where they felt even their friends were against them, they felt defensive. I think at this point, everybody realizes that we got to deal with the situation as it is now, and we can look back at the Exxon Valdez oil spill. We can look back at what could be done to keep it from happening again, but I think we're probably beyond the finger-pointing stage right now. Still, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are looking forward to what Bill Stevens has to say and hope that it will be substantive and won't just be more PR stuff from Exxon, because the company certainly has pumped out a great deal of that during the cleanup stage. And I think the question everybody has on their minds is, what kind of commitment does Exxon have from here on out? Come next spring, they have said, Otto Harrison has told us right on our own network, we will be back in the spring. But in what strength? and what are they really doing now to know how geared up they'll be? Governor Cooper has found it necessary to set up a state research and development and beach monitoring effort. The state wants to be ready to go to advise as to exactly what needs to be done in the spring, but we've heard very little from Exxon so far as to how they're going to prepare through the winter for their efforts next spring.
We know also that they've been giving the same assurances to the administration a couple of weeks ago. I was here when Vice President Dan Quayle was here, and he was certainly saying that the administration had been received assurances that Exxon would be back, and in fact said if Exxon's not back, then we will be, meaning the federal government. So I think some type of forward-looking thing will be coming up.
We have a large media presence here today, Bruce. How many cameras do you count there?
I count six. At least one of them is the University of Alaska, which is taping it for on contract for other universities. There is a great deal of interest outside in this as well as here in Alaska. This is a story, as we all know from the very beginning, has transcended Alaska and reached to all corners of the globe.
We also have a very large presence in the hall itself. They've taken out all of the partitions in the Hilton Ballroom. It is an enormous ballroom, and it looks like just about every seat in here is full. I don't know. Are you a crowd counter, Bruce?
I think this room holds probably 500 people or more, would be my guess, and this is definitely a packed house. Who's who from Anchorage's business and industry is here. There's legislators here, civic leaders. I think there's the wide range of Anchorage's business community and political community is here to see what Stevens has to say.
Yeah, I would say we probably have a quorum of the state legislature here.
certainly
of the Anchorage caucus. Dave Harbor is basically giving a number of announcements here. It's kind of organizationally cumbersome because you have two organizations sponsoring it. This is the regular Monday afternoon seat as hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. And then at the same time, the State Chamber of Commerce has kicked off its trade show and convention over at the Egan Center. So it's kind of a joint presentation. And you have to have dignitaries from both organizations here to make remarks from the podium as people finish up their lunches here at the Hilton Hotel.
If you have a question, write it on a piece of paper, hold it up. A chamber staff person will bring it by and deliver those to me, and I'll get through as many as I can by the end of the forum with the time remaining. And now, Bill, I'd like to address a personal remark to you and to Otto and to your colleagues. I know that, and I haven't discussed this with you, this is right from the heart at this podium, I know that beginning in last spring that you and your colleagues must have been as devastated and unhappy with the accident that occurred as Alaskans and Chamber members in general were. But I also know, and the Chamber knows, and when we think about it, most Alaskans know that over the years, Exxon has been an incredible contributor to not only our economy, but to the social fabric of Alaska in general and Anchorage in particular. And this we should not forget. And the fact that it is destined to go on, we should not forget. Last August and in September, Bill, we became aware in the chamber that there were a number of oil industry employees taking unfair criticism for events that occurred beyond their control. And so it was that the chamber sponsored a program to recognize the men and women, the employees of the oil industry that make this accomplishment happen in terms of our economy and our social progress. And that program went on until our last meeting. So for us, your presence here is an honor. We appreciate it. I know that it's the third major presentation that you've made in the country since the spill, and we appreciate you being able to come forward now and share with us your reflections on Valdez. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave, for those.
Excuse me, Bill.
We have a little disruption in the crowd.
Okay, let me have some of our chamber members take our non-chamber members out of the room.
There are a couple of people standing up and shouting in the crowd. A man picked up a doll of a dead black oiled bird and held it up. Somebody ripped it out of his hand.
You, sir, are a great minority. Would you please leave the room? You're not obviously not a part of this program.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm...
Protesters are leaving the room.
In some ways, I'm glad that happened. We've had an awful lot of Exxon employees in your state over the last 6 months. And needless to say, there's been a lot of understandable anger, frustration, apprehension, a lot of emotion. And that's very understandable by anybody that's been directly involved and impacted by the spill. And certainly our people have had to deal with that sort of anger on a daily basis. And, you know, it's the very least that I can do as president of Exxon Company USA, come forward and, if you will, face people who do truly have a high degree of upset with us. So don't any of you folks feel that we in Exxon feel that those individuals reflect the average Alaskan. Certainly we have been exposed to some very fine people, some genuine people. We've had some disagreements, as I'll comment in a moment. But believe me, we've gotten an awful lot of very sincere and hard effort in terms of trying to work what has been a mutual problem for us. So again, Dave, no apologies from anyone, please. I very much appreciate this opportunity to speak with you today, those of you here as well as those listening and watching elsewhere in the state. Perhaps I should have sought such a forum earlier, but as you'll appreciate, it's been a quite busy summer for those of us in Exxon. And now, 7 months after the spill, the time has come, I believe, for a much broader perspective, because much that needed to be done over the course of the summer has now, in fact, been accomplished. And Dave, I can think of no better group than to begin this sort of a dialogue with than with this group, which certainly reflects the business leadership of this state. It goes without saying to note that the accident in Prince William Sound on March 24th has been the most widely and frequently reported story involving oil and the environment of this decade, if not, in fact, of all time. You may wonder, then, what's left for me to tell you. Not a lot, I should say, if you're expecting an inside, untold story. There are, however, some reflections that I think it would be useful to share with you, including some comments on some of the broader issues. Let me begin by observing that Exxon is a company which has always placed great emphasis on safety and on reliability in its operations. We've sought to conduct our business unobtrusively, disturbing our neighbors and the environment in which we operate as little as possible. For such a company, as Dave noted earlier, what happened in Prince William Sound was, and yes, still is, like a bad dream. But we recognize the reality. We've had to accept and handle the problem as best we could, as have too, I realize, many Alaskans. Recognizing this fact,
We have another protester who's standing up and yelling in the background, saying, we don't want to hear any more of your lies. And we have security people moving to remove her. Some of the press people are gathering around with shotgun microphones, and the security people are going over to deal with the situation.
A couple of prominent members of the Chamber of Commerce are politely asking you to leave at this point. And security is now escorting her out very gently. Bill Stevens is ready to talk again.
This is the second
recognizing the fact that we share a difficult problem. We in Exxon have tried to be responsive to the many difficult issues which have resulted. While we've done our best to be fair and reasonable, I know, too, that we haven't been able to satisfy everyone. I'm conscious also that some of the issues which have confronted us as a company have gone well beyond the kind of things we're familiar with. Indeed, I might observe, beyond the expertise of any sector of private industry or government that I'm aware of. Nevertheless, despite the enormity and the complexity of the task, much has been accomplished over the summer, both on the shorelines and more broadly as well. Moreover, and this is a point that I want to emphasize, neither the enormity of the problem nor its complexity has prevented Exxon from accepting responsibility for what happened in Prince William Sound and from acting accordingly. Yes, there have been mistakes, and certainly there have been disagreements. But these mistakes and the disagreements have not reflected any lack of intent or desire on our part to do the job properly. Rather, they're a measure of the difficulty of the problem. It's been a problem that's demanded the best efforts of Exxon at all levels over the past 7 months. Anyone who believes that we haven't given the matter full attention couldn't be more wrong. One thing for sure, we and everyone else should now have a renewed respect for what chance can do when it zeroes in on a target. Valdez has made us appreciate all over again that, plan as we will, take care as best we can, we're all subject to chance. Especially are we subject to human error. Now, to suggest that the chance was a factor in the accident is not in any way to seek to avoid responsibility. It may be that if the error is human, to blame it on someone else or something else is even more human. But that is not what Exxon has done. Our focus on the problem, our employees' dedicated efforts here in Alaska, and the expenditure of well over $1 billion on the cleanup effort, I submit, all bear witness to that. Nevertheless, a recognition that chance often does have a say in human affairs allows a more dispassionate view of what happened. This accident, I think, raises an important fundamental question. Should we let chance events, which could happen, prevent us from taking risk? The fact is that a measure of risk is inherent in all progress. Certainly, I don't need to tell you folks that. Without an acceptance of risk, there would have been no Prudhoe Bay Field, no Trans-Alaska Pipeline, nor all the economic and other benefits that these developments have brought. Always, though, we should be on the lookout for ways to improve the odds, to do what we do with greater safety and with greater assurances of minimal risk. Valdez suggests several ways that we might go about reducing risk. First and foremost, of course, is preventing the accident in the first place. Surely the economic and the emotional cost of a really big catastrophic event underscore the premium that we should place on prevention. Better communication, I feel, would help also. As simple a thing as making sure that the public is more aware in advance of the risk involved and of plans to deal with possible accidents would help. When this accident occurred suddenly, many began to wonder if the reward was worth the risk. That we need better advanced planning for what to do when such an emergency occurs is another very obvious lesson. The American Petroleum Institute has already taken this to heart in its plan for a series of major response bases located along the coast of the U.S. The proposed equipping and manning of these bases will be at a level far exceeding anything seen before. And similar measures, of course, have been adopted recently by Alyeska. Putting such resources to effective use, however, is far from an automatic process. If there's one thing that Valdez has reaffirmed, it's that timely, effective action, the kind of action needed in an emergency, cannot be taken by committee. When several groups with different priorities and differing views about what should be done jointly face an urgent need for action, too often the outcome is confrontation or no action at all, or at best a lowest common denominator sort of an approach. The larger interest often tends to get lost in the give and take. Moreover, when criticism comes unaccompanied by constructive alternatives, it serves no useful purpose and simply frustrates the process. I think that by now, all of us would agree that there must be someone clearly in charge, someone who can weigh the issues, cut through the disagreements, and force timely action. In the case of the initial response to this accident, the voice nominally in charge was that of the Coast Guard, but importantly, as Admiral Robbins has said, as coordinator rather than commander. As the cleanup has proceeded, however, the Coast Guard has been clearly in charge, although again hampered by a very cumbersome committee structure. I would suggest that other conclusions about what Valdez has taught us will emerge as we have more time to reflect. But none, I hope, will persuade us that we should avoid great undertakings merely because they're risky. Admittedly, we must find ways to better manage risk. But if we're unwilling to accept that challenge, this country and all of us will be poorer. Now, given the national attention to Valdez, individuals and interest groups of all kinds have expressed views and sought to play a role. Obviously, the two most involved parties, the two of us that have the most at stake, are Exxon and Alaska. Now that it's time to begin to look ahead, I see the relationship between us as particularly important. We need to, once again, reaffirm the common ground that we share and to work together for the future development of this state's resources. Our history of involvement in Alaskan affairs is a long one. Our first geologic work in this state was done in 1954, 5 years before you became a state. And in 1957, we drilled our first Wildcat well on the Alaskan Peninsula. Later, Exxon was the 50% partner in the well that discovered Prudhoe Bay. In the two decades since then, we've been a leading explorer for Alaskan oil and gas. I wish I could say a leading successful explorer, but not quite so. I'll share that with my exploration people, though. Certainly, there have been dry holes and frustrations, but there have been exciting successes as well. In total, up to now, we've invested over $8 billion in this state of close close to $2.5 billion of which was spent in exploration. And that excludes the billion-plus dollars that we've spent here this summer. We've developed as well Arctic technology and know-how through the efforts of a great many of our talented people. But certainly it's been money and effort well spent. And looking back, it's plain to me that the relationship between Alaska and Exxon has been mutually beneficial, and certainly we look forward to extending it well into the future. Now, most of you in this audience are not directly in the oil business, but certainly all of you are affected by what happens to the Alaskan economy. Therefore, all of you have some stake in Alaskan oil because it's the state's largest industry. The significance of this fact, I think, becomes clearer when Alaskan oil is considered in the context of national energy needs. I find it disquieting to realize that the energy situation of the United States here in 1989 has many of the features that disturbed us during the tumultuous period of the 1970s. Declining U.S. production, soaring imports, unrest in the Middle East, and few, if any, viable alternatives to oil and gas, particularly in the near term. Our nation has difficult decisions to make, decisions that require a frank and objective assessment of the many trade-offs involved. Whatever course is ultimately chosen, there's one thing we can be sure of. It cannot be totally risk-free. Economic growth, a clean environment, expensive but secure energy, and minimum waste are many of the conflicting things that we in this country want. Finding our way among them is, will be, a painful quest for balance. Special agendas of any kind, however important they may be to segments of our population, must not be allowed to obscure the common overall interest. And central to that interest, I believe, is our national economic well-being. The U.S. cannot preclude further development of its own resources without risking serious loss in its international competitiveness. Now, as this debate unfolds, there are several things about this state that everyone should keep in mind. Alaska is enormously important to U.S. energy supply. This state, as you know, currently accounts for a quarter of all the oil produced in our country, and the consensus is that the potential for future discoveries is great. A recent Department of Interior study estimates that the undiscovered oil in Alaska may be as much as a third of the undiscovered volume remaining in the country. A considerable part of this is thought to be in the small portion of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge along the Beaufort Sea, a fact, of course, which bears heavily on its importance for access. There's bound to be an intense exchange of views before this matter is decided. I feel it will be neither in this state's interest nor in the national interest if the passions aroused by Valdez were to preclude a rational resolution. Broad issues of national policy aside, we in Exxon realize that the story of Valdez is fundamentally about people. Some of these individuals, over 11,000 of them, were employed over the course of this summer. Most were citizens of Alaska, and granted, they were paid. It was more than a day's pay that motivated their labors, in my view. Many truly wanted to help. Over 700 were Exxon employees who left their homes and families to work in the cleanup operation. These people, too, were dismayed by the spill. and they wanted to show their concern by their actions. They felt it was important to demonstrate as employees that we in Exxon do care. To every one of these 11,000 people, and to the multitude of others who I know wanted to help, and many wrote saying so, I extend my heartfelt thanks. Now, in closing, let me say once again to you in this audience and to the others that Exxon regrets, we deeply regret what happened. However much we've sought to mitigate the impact and to deal responsibly with the cleanup, we know that in the eyes of some, our efforts have been lacking. But we've been here and we've done our best. We did not run and hide. And finally, I would remind you that Exxon remains involved. About 400 people will be employed here over the winter, monitoring both onshore and offshore, conducting extensive scientific research work, settling claims, and working with local impacted communities. When spring comes, it's going to be time for a new look at the shorelines and to make judgments on what can be done, which will be a net benefit. If based on that review, the federal on-scene coordinator requests that Exxon undertake additional reasonable work, we'll do so. Dave, to you and your associates, my thanks to all of you for listening to what I've had to say. I very much appreciate this group's time and attention, but equally important, the opportunity you've given me to speak to all Alaskans.
Friendly reception from the crowd here at the State and Anchorage Chamber of Commerce for a speech by Exxon USA President Bill Stevens. It was interrupted twice by demonstrations from the crowd as people left the room.
If you want your questions asked, get them forward. We're going through the audience here.
Dave Harbor is soliciting questions from the crowd, and there seems to be no lack of questions. People are...
Spoke to us from the heart a minute ago. This question appears to be along that line. How have you been impacted personally, and what are your personal impressions of the effects of the spill?
Well, that's really a two-part question. First part, how have you personally been affected? I almost want to deal with kind of lightheartedly and say I sure have spent an awful lot of time on airplanes over the course of this summer between Washington and Alaska. As I commented in my talk, any large organization which has existed for over 100 years, such as the company I'm employed by, has a good deal of pride. And when you're confronted with an accident of this enormity, when you truly realize it's something that shouldn't have ever happened, yet you're at the center of it and trying to do what you can to set it right, it's a blow to your pride. And that's possibly, I think, from a personal standpoint, the biggest impact that I feel. But, of course, we have been so busy and so involved, so committed to do what we can to set the matter right, to deal with the broad impacts of the spill, that we've had precious little time to deal with some of the personal or more emotional aspects of it. I cannot overemphasize to you the concentration that we've had by Otto Harrison and his organization here in Alaska, as well as elsewhere, our research organizations, the people that we've pulled together from all walks of our company to come up and attack this problem in its broadest dimensions. The second part of the question dealt with what are your impressions about the impact of the spill, if you will. Well, I was fortunate enough to catch a weather window Friday afternoon in Prince William Sound. And I guess that's the fifth field visit that I've had an opportunity to make in the eight or so trips I have made up here this summer. And so I've had an ample opportunity to go out and walk the shorelines, see the operation. And I've got several pet shorelines that I have gone back to before they were cleaned, after they were first cleaned with re-oiling. And I was back on a couple of those beaches, those shorelines, not beaches, on Friday afternoon. I also visited very purposefully a number of the Dirty Dozen beaches, if you've read about that in your newspapers, because I wanted to see what shape they're in. I think anyone with an objective view who goes out there and looks at what has transpired over the summer by dint of the efforts of the army of men and women who got out and participated in the cleanup, and also with a helping hand from nature, and also with some science in terms of bioremediation, can't help but find it remarkable the shape that some of those shorelines have come along. Yes, there's still some shorelines that do have some oil in it, on them rather. You can find rocks that are tacky. The Dirty Dozen account for about 1 to 1.5% of the total impacted shoreline. It's a very small proportion. And when I look at some of the shoreline that I walked on before and after, and even how it has cleaned itself up, so to speak, how nature has cleaned it up since around the 1st of August that I was on it, I find the progress very remarkable, and certainly look forward to a lot of that happening now with the bioremediation chemicals that are out and with nature over the course of the winter. Obviously, we're going to be doing an awful lot of scientific study this year to put a lot more quantitative thoughts on my qualitative description.
Thank you, Bill. Don't leave. We're going to just stretch it as long as we can.
I'm not going to.
Alcohol abuse and use is the source of this multi-billion dollar problem, says the question. What is being done to stop its use in the work environment?
Well, let me just say that the first part of the question, which is more by way of statement, I have to reserve judgment on. I can't just accept and agree with that based on the facts that I know. But clearly, this accident has to raise concerns about alcohol use in the workforce. We've had for over 12 years a very, very comprehensive and strict alcohol use policy. And in 1987, we broadened that to be a very comprehensive drug and alcohol policy. We felt that, and clearly I think the facts would show that our policy is at the leading edge of U.S. industry in terms of an enlightened way to deal with drugs and alcohol in the workplace. Yet, yes, we were confronted with an accident where there is the possibility some view that alcohol may have played a part. We've gone back, re-examined our alcohol policy, as have many segments of our population since accidents like the Amtrak accident on the East Coast, possibly some of the airline crashes in recent months. And we've made some changes in our alcohol policy, alcohol and drug policy, rather. Our workforce has accepted those, realizing that we share not a problem in Exxon, but a problem in our society, and as a responsible corporate concern, we've got to reflect and deal with the problems of society, and obviously that's what we've tried to do.
Thank you, Bill. From a public relations point of view, what do you think are the lessons learned from the spill? What might have been done differently?
Well, That's a very difficult question. And we've given it a fair amount of thought, although, as I said a moment ago, most of our focus through this year has not been on public relations. In fact, very little, if any. And that, in essence, was the genesis of the comment Dave made. This is about the third speech I've given on this subject. I won't tell you how many hundreds of opportunities we've had, but we've just not consciously thought to deal, not consciously desired, rather, to stand up and discuss the matter, because we're not going to do anything public relations-wise to help ourselves. What we have been doing and what we must continue to do is to deal with the cleanup operation and the other problems. And I think that's one of the lessons from a public relations standpoint. Actions have to speak louder than words. I believe our actions have. Now, on a more micro basis, one of the things I do is get a lot more telephone lines into Valdez to handle the flood of media inquiries. We had an awful lot of frustration in the media because of lack of ability to communicate on the scene, and that reflected on us, if you will. Similarly, we set a telephone bank up to try to deal with the media in Houston. I think we put in 15 people. We should have had 1,500, considering the interest. You cannot imagine the intense level of interest that we got through the early days of this bill from the media on an international basis. And obviously we've got some lessons that we've got to take to heart and try to deal with better if ever again, God forbid, something like this should happen.
Thank you. We're getting some good questions here. Won't cleanup efforts and the prospect of any future oil spill cleanup plans lower the wellhead price of Alaskan oil?
Well, obviously, any time we take steps to cater to the really big catastrophic event, what I call kind of a worst-case scenario sort of view of operating, and any time we take steps to improve prevention, if you will, there are costs involved in that. And as I commented clearly, prevention is going to be one of the keys in the future. We've all got, all companies, I think, have got to think harder about what actions can be taken in spite of the cost. But there will inevitably be a point of balance between cost-benefit. Clearly, as the question indicates, cost will go up. The increased vigilance of tugs and response vessels that Alyeska has put into the sound are added cost and, if you will, affect netbacks. But that's the price, if you will, that we have to pay to cater to risk. It's a constant balance, though, that we have to strike as companies and as a society.
Thank you, Bill. Have you changed your production or exploration plans in light of the event?
No. We've not in terms of feeling like we can operate in an environmentally responsible manner in all of the areas that we're looking at. We've made no changes.
Still with me? What improvements have been made in management training within the company's operations of tankers, other vessels?
We've really made no changes in terms of management training or in terms of, say, ship captain training, if you will. We've gone back, as you would expect, and looked at our training. We've looked at our procedures. We've looked at our manuals and guidelines and so on. And by and large, in terms of the essence of that question, really see no need for change. Now, I don't want to come across in that way as being self-satisfied. Clearly, we had a procedural aberration here. Something happened that shouldn't have happened. Procedures weren't followed, but the procedures were sound. The instructions were sound. They just weren't followed. And clearly, one of the things that we'll be doing is taking greater steps to assure ourselves that company policy and procedures are followed.
Thank you, Bill.
I know you're going to get more time with the press in just a minute, but on behalf of the chamber, I want you to have this recognition of your visit today. Thank you very much, Bill Stevens.
Thank you.
Bill Stevens, president of Exxon USA.
We have a couple more important things to do before you leave.
And I don't think we need to go back to the podium for the conclusion of the program here. But basically, Bill Stevens tried to put the Exxon Valdez oil spill in the context of the bigger picture, I'd say. He seemed to be very concerned about what bad PR or public reacting negatively to the spill would do to public attitudes and the cost of doing business for the oil industry. There were repeated references to the risk that is taken any time you look for oil, and how you always have to take chances, and the way that you plan and the way that you spend money is oriented around
catering to risk. Catering to risk is a phrase that he uses, and he said, should we let chance rule out us taking future action, meaning drilling, meaning additional exploration?
Bill Stevens said that Exxon has spent over $1 billion on the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and has been a continuing presence in the state of Alaska, not always finding oil, but always spending money here. The total numbers that he had was,
$8 billion is what he said, excluding the $1 billion that was spent this summer on the oil spill cleanup.
He said that the Exxon Valdez oil spill looks to be the biggest oil story of the decade. He said that they had to put extra operators on. They put 15 extra operators on at Exxon headquarters in Houston, and they could have put on 1,500. The interest was so intense. He himself did seem to be almost awestricken by the reaction to this event. He said he'd been back to Alaska five different times since the spill, and he had certain pet beaches that he went and checked out every time he came here that the weather permitted. He said he didn't say he was satisfied, I wouldn't say, but he did say that he was...
He said he was struck by the progress and by the how clean some of them really were. And he said he also visited some of the Dirty Dozen beaches selected by the state as what they consider to be the worst of the worst. And he repeated assurances that Exxon would be studying the beaches throughout the winter, and if the federal government asked them, would be back in some capacity.
Yeah, he used, I think, an important expression there, though. He said reasonable. If the federal on-scene coordinator makes reasonable recommendations to them, they will be back, and they will be happy to do those things. So I think it's a little bit up in the air. He spoke of Exxon doing a bunch of research work over the summer, but he really didn't get very specific about it. He said that the spill was probably beyond the expertise of anybody to handle. It was like a bad dream. He didn't think any company could have handled it. He said that they were hoping in the PR front that they hadn't taken an effort in the public relations direction, that basically they were hoping that their actions would speak louder than their words. But sort of tacitly, I think, Bruce, that he did kind of acknowledge that maybe their PR hasn't always been the best, that they haven't always come across as looking like the good guys in this incident.
I think that's certainly true. On another interesting note, there was a question about the role of alcohol in the workplace, and he said that he was reserving judgment as to what extent alcohol was involved in the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. He backed very, very carefully away from that and avoided saying anything at all that may have acknowledged the role of alcohol in the accident. He said also he defended company policy in a wide variety of areas, including their drug and alcohol policy, saying that they were some of the best in the world, that they were the rules were on the books, and he called the accident in part a breach of policy, in essence.
Yeah,
procedures weren't followed.
Yeah, he said we've looked at our procedures for tankers, and we find that we haven't found the need to make any changes. It seems to be a question here that the procedures just weren't followed.
And he in fact described the wreck as a procedural aberration, trying to say that the procedures were sound and that they don't see the need for big changes in this area.
He looked ahead to ANWR, and I would say oil policy, the oil policy of the country in general. This is probably a note that we're going to hear sounded over and over and over again. He says, look, it's probably going to cost our net back. We're probably going to have to, we will be spending more money in Alaska to make sure our operations are safe, and this will affect the net back price of oil, but it just has to be done. The American Petroleum Institute has got its plans for oil spill response centers, although none of them will be in Alaska, but still response centers around the country. And Alyeska, of course, has beefed up their capabilities to deal with any untoward incident involving oil. And he seemed to be saying that the industry is going to look ahead, be responsible, try and reduce the risk, make the odds good that something like this will never happen again, but essentially you're still going to have to take risks if you're going to have a domestic energy supply.
Along those lines, he also kind of raised the specter of the gas lines and drew some parallels between the situation of the oil industry now and the domestic oil picture and the picture at the early 70s, saying that there is a decreasing U.S. supply and basically making the case to drill in ANWR and for additional exploration. And he tried to couch that in the kind of policy terms that lawmakers are going to have to be dealing with in Congress over the next year.
Another expression that Mr. Stevens used repeatedly was balancing the risk and the benefits. He spoke of a quest for balance. When you're trying to make risky decisions, you look for what the environmental balance is going to be. He said that there should be just one person in charge of an oil spill. I thought that was important to hear out of Exxon. They tried all kinds of things. The way the federal government's regulations about oil spills are written, there's a huge team, a response team of bureaucrats that makes the decisions on how to handle the spill. It was totally ungainly in this situation. They met by teleconference. It was hard to get everybody together. Everybody was really busy. So it was very ungainly to have the group meet. The state pressed for a federal takeover. The Coast Guard responded, we don't really have the money to take this thing over. It's better if Exxon just keeps going. They ended up with a sort of a troika arrangement where basically you had the Admiral, at that time Admiral Nelson, you had Denny Kelso, and you had Frank Iorossi. And every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Valdez, they would get together and decide what to do. Well, as Mr. Stevens has rightly pointed out, you really can't have committees making decisions about how to deal with an oil spill. It has to be decided and dealt with quickly. Too often, when you have a committee, you're simply dodging responsibility, and you also get the situation where people can point fingers afterwards. The Coast Guard Admiral Robbins, in his speech on Friday, said much the same thing. He said, look, we don't really have the authority to tell Exxon to do anything. And so I think maybe we may see something come of this. It's under consideration by the Congress right now. The Senate bill on oil spills does not give the Coast Guard the authority to take over a large oil spill. The House is kind of thinking in the other direction. Ted Stevens in his oil spill bill had initially put in a provision saying that the Coast Guard would take over a large oil spill. That was knocked down by the time Bennett Johnson and everybody else in the Senate got done with it. So we may see something different from the House, and we may hear quite a bit more about this issue in the future.
He also said, along those lines, he said that the Coast Guard, rightly so, it was his phrase, served as a coordinator, so we may see a direction in terms of where the oil companies would like to see that responsibility, that they're not ready to see the federal government federalize things. On another note, he also kind of held out the olive branch, the state of Alaska, and worked to try and build a relationship that has been contentious at best with the state, and said that it's time to reaffirm the common ground between Alaska and the oil industry, and that it's time to work together to get resources developed here and to move forward. It seems that he is trying to move forward in the relationship with the Cooper administration, with the state as a whole.
Yeah, and I think that's important. There certainly has been a finger-pointing stage, and there certainly is still a lot of uncertainty about what exactly Exxon's going to be doing in the winter and what it's likely to be doing in the spring. He pointed out that the latest survey on oil exploration prospects shows Alaska having about a third of the unexplored oil prospects in the U.S. If we're serious about having a domestic supply of energy, clearly Alaska is going to play a part, and Alaska playing a part means that all the oil companies, the entire industry, is going to have to cooperate with the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska is going to have to cooperate with the oil industry.
That about wraps it up, Steve. You've been listening to a live broadcast of speech by William Stevens, president of Exxon USA, and this has been brought to you by KSKA News and APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
This is KCHU Valdez Cordova. The time is 10 minutes after 1 o'clock. KCHU has preempted regular programming today in order to provide you with coverage of the presentation by Exxon President William Stevens at the Alaska Chamber of Commerce Convention and Trade Show in Anchorage. Stevens' speech was entitled Reflections on Valdez and was provided to KCHU through the Alaska Public Radio Network and sister station KSKA in Anchorage. We now continue with our regular programming and join Sidran in Record in Progress.